elephant slavery begins when they are small babies. One ancient training practice is to chain an elephant's leg to the ground with a stake. This limits her ability to freely roam around. As the elephant grows bigger and stronger, she could easily pull up that stake and go foraging for food. Even with the hauser unconnected and lying visibly on the ground, the feeling of the manacle around her leg is enough to restrain her, as if connected by an unbreakable, invisible chain. This highly intelligent creature remembers the feeling of restricted movement and simply stands still whenever the shackle is in place. Bound by invisible chains to habits, behaviors, and attitudes we too learned at an early age, how different are we from this elephant in our actual behavior? In 2002, 11-year-old Sean Hornbeck was out riding his bike in his rural Missouri town. Sean was abducted by Michael Devlin, a 41-year-old pizza parlor manager, who was generally known as an innocuous, nice enough kind of guy. Well, he was not so nice. Devlin abused and tortured Sean with a very strange twist. Devlin acted out a fatherly role, pretending Sean was his son. He even gave Sean the freedom to go outside. All this happened in plain view of his neighbors and only an hour's drive from where he went missing. Sean even assumed his abductor's last name. Sean made friends, played video games, and even used the internet freely, yet didn't attempt to escape. His captivity was finally discovered 4 years later when Devon kidnapped another boy, Ben Onby, who was discovered with Sean 4 days later. This kind of identification with and sympathy for abductors got a name in 1973 during a 6-day-long bank robbery in Stockholm. Those who were held captive by the robbers started defending them even after they were let go. What is now referred to as the Stockholm Syndrome has deep roots in our subconscious mind. The longer someone is held, the more likely it can happen. Some of you may remember the heiress Patty Hearst being kidnapped and joining up with the Symbionese Liberation Army. Why does this happen? Well, one explanation that makes some sense to me is that it arises out of our evolution. If you think back across the enormous span of human development, our ancestors mostly existed in tribal societies, small groups. And what anthropologists have observed and recorded history confirms is that when neighboring tribes go to war with each other, the winners often enslave the losers, especially the women. Even without war, abductions from neighboring tribes, especially of women, has probably been going on for a very long time. So the ones who resisted very likely were killed and didn't leave behind any ancestors to contribute to the contemporary gene pool. But those who were compliant adapted to their new setting and produced children contributed genes that selected for that behavior. In this way, some researchers think submission to authority has been baked into who we are, setting up the development of larger scale civilization on the positive side, but also interfering with our yearning for individual freedom. While being submissive may have value for scaling up civilization, it can be a huge liability in relationships. The attempt by one person to control another can easily degenerate into emotional, psychological, and physical abuse. Mostly, it is wives abused by husbands. Quite often, the women do not leave these situations, sometimes defending their abusers, even after suffering bodily injury. From the outside of the relationship, this willingness to stay with an abuser doesn't make any sense. An explanation, though, using evolutionary thinking, may see that this evolves around some kind of glue that brings people together long enough to reproduce and raise children that is embedded in our tribal history. And like slavery, helplessness and hopelessness can stop the process of resisting abuse. Reading Frederick Douglass's autobiography opened my eyes to the demoralizing and dehumanizing effects of captivity. The mind-numbing, suffering field slaves experienced is captured in his words. If, at any one time of my life, more than another, I was made to drink the bitterest dregs of slavery, that time was during the first 6 months of my stay with Mr. Covey. We were worked in all weathers. It was never too cold or too hot. It could never rain, blow, hail, or snow too hard for us to work in the field. Work, work, work was scarcely more the order of the day than of the night. The longest days were too short for him, and the shortest nights were too long for him. I was somewhat unmanageable when I first went there, but a few months of his harsh discipline tamed me. Mr. Covey succeeded in breaking me. I was broken in body, soul, and spirit. My natural elasticity was crushed. My intellect languished. The cheerful spark that lingered about my eye died. The dark night of slavery closed in around me, and behold, a man transformed into a brute. Douglass's servitude was real and unchosen. Yet what broke him was Mr. Covey's ability to activate his capacity to submit. This willingness to submit rather than resist, to allow invisible chains to hold us and interfere with seeking freedom, also operates in far more subtle and insidious ways in the human mind. In our minds, think of compelling habits exhibited in the way many of us consume unhealthy food or consume unwholesome media to which we submit. What about the prejudices we unconsciously act out with our eyes and our attention? And then there are the life-denying and self-limiting beliefs we've developed to lock ourselves into the prison of our own design. I can't do this. I can't do that. Well, today, I declare that we are capable of breaking the bonds of submission. We have the inner power to unlock these invisible manacles and to move toward freedom. As Walt Whitman put it, great is liberty, great is equality. I am their follower. Yours is the muscle of life or death. Yours the perfect science. In you I have absolute faith. Our minds, the gift of consciousness, can lift us from being brutes. Reading opened the door to liberation for Douglass. Through reading, his awareness grew and to helped him see his own inherent worth and dignity and the corruption of slavery. Before reading, he knew the oppression of slavery in his body. The physical hardships were terrible to him, but he didn't understand the evil of the institution itself. Reading the abolitionist arguments opened his mind to the moral injury of slavery and hardened his defiance. That defiance took the form of resisting the inhumane treatment of his master, Mr. Covey, by striking back. This would have easily got him killed, and did for many slaves, but luckily for him, it didn't. After fighting his master for 2 hours, finally exhausted, Mr. Covey left him. Douglas describes the effect of successfully defending himself from abuse. This battle with Mr. Covey was a turning point in my career as a slave. It rekindled the few expiring embers of freedom and revived within me a sense of my own manhood. It recalled the departed self-confidence and inspired in me again with a determination to be free. The gratification afforded by the triumph was a full compensation for whatever else might follow, even death itself. He only can understand the deep satisfaction which I experienced who has himself repelled by force the bloody arm of slavery. I felt as I never felt before. It was a glorious resurrection from the tomb of slavery to the heaven of freedom. My long-crushed spirit rose, cowardice departed, bold defiance took its place, and I now resolved that, however long I might remain a slave in form, the day had passed forever when I could be a slave in fact. I did not hesitate to let it be known of me that the white man who expected to succeed in whipping must also succeed in killing me. It thrills me to read this to you because in it we see the flowering of the dignity of the human spirit. This is the awareness of freedom that begins to lead us out of bondage. Yet, this moment of fortification of the spirit is not enough to secure one's freedom. The flush of courage can be washed away by the fear of consequences. It can be mighty hard to sustain the drive to freedom. Just a little hunger and thirst in Sinai had the Jews wishing that they had stayed in Egypt by the flesh pots over the fire, and not followed Moses through the Red Sea to freedom. Because our courage and our understanding can be tender and easily shaken, we need others who can support and encourage us. Douglas needed a network of abolitionists to support his plan for escape. Domestic violence shelters like Equinox here in Albany can support the inner growth and fortification of the spirit to stand up for oneself and one's children and begin to end their abuse. Peer support groups can be the best ways to deal with substance abuse and addictive behavior patterns. Groups like Weight Watchers have been perfecting the psychological methods and techniques to help people establish healthier eating patterns. Evolution has also selected for group bonding that can be harnessed to seek freedom. Yet no matter how well we recognize those invisible chains and how many people are around us supporting us, we still have to choose freedom. And not just once. We need to continue to choose freedom and follow our own inner guidance rather than be compelled by our past conditioning and habit. That takes patience and persistence and risk. The safer thing to do for Douglas was to remain a slave and not try to escape, like the elephant allowing the manacle to bind him. Many slaves did a rational analysis and decided it would be safer, not more pleasant by any means, but safer not to run away and risk death and recapture. Recapture could mean, often did mean, being sold to a plantation in the deeper South where they imagined their suffering would be far worse. Better to stay with the devil you know. This choice of freedom over security is huge for most of us, even with our far more comfortable lives than what those slaves endured. The consequences of our choice of freedom are unknowable in the moment the choice is made. And often we are not making it for ourselves alone. Our families and friends will have to deal with the consequences of our actions. Before he departed for freedom, Douglas wrote about the sadness he felt leaving his friends behind. He writes, "I had a number of warm-hearted friends in Baltimore, friends that I loved almost as I did my life. And the thought of being separated from them forever was painful beyond expression. It is my opinion that thousands would escape from slavery who now remain, but for the strong cords of affection that bind them to their friends." And sometimes we can do no other than to choose freedom. It was that for Douglas, or die trying. Douglas writes about how he felt when he made his way finally to New York City. "It was a moment of the highest excitement I ever experienced. I suppose I felt as one may imagine the unarmed mariner to feel when he is rescued by a friendly man of war from the pursuit of a pirate. In writing to a dear friend immediately after my arrival in New York, I said I felt like one who had escaped a den of hungry lions. This state of mind, however, very soon subsided, and I was again seized with the feeling of great insecurity and loneliness." Choosing freedom is a moment that creates the next moment. There is no final ending choice, but one that conditions the next moment of choice. It is a path that can be walked in every moment of every day, and some days we will veer off the path to freedom, and some days we will find our way back. What I can testify to from my own choices to move towards freedom is the inner satisfaction and the sense of creating meaning for my life those choices have yielded. And Unitarian Universalism celebrates and prizes those free choices. May we be so emboldened to choose freedom, not just for ourselves, but for the good and benefit of all. So be it.